Hello, this is Natalie Griffin, the Naughty Shaman, coming at you live from our recording studios, which tonight happens to be the dining room, because the room where I usually do all the recording is a total disaster. I'm sure none of you can relate. So I'm now infiltrating the dining room. I am so happy to be talking with you again tonight, and I want to thank you for all the positive feedback that I got on email and on Facebook, and I really appreciate the input from our last podcast. And I've been thinking about this one for a while because I've had so many clients that have been very inspiring, and there have been some common themes. And I always think when clients come in with common themes, that has to be common to so many of us out there. It's not just us. It's like all of you out there who are listening that don't happen to be in Connecticut. So I wanted to talk with you tonight about this exquisite art of transmuting stress, pressure, and hardship into beauty, into medicine that nourishes the community. And there are so many of us dealing with so much stress and pressure and grief and heaviness right now. And my clients are no strangers to this. And what I've been seeing over the last couple of weeks is like this sense of overwhelm that is very consistent and common among all of them. And, you know, I'm listening to these stories and it's like listening to a bad country song. It's like I would be eating popcorn and going, oh my God, then what happened? Oh my God, then what happened? And then I'm thinking, oh my God, how could that have happened? And, you know, if we were at Starbucks, that's probably how that conversation would have gone. But in my capacity as a coach and as a shamanic coach in particular, I get to listen and hold space from a completely different vantage point. I get to actually listen from multiple perspectives into the story. And because of that, I can see these patterns and different things. And it's almost like there's this bag of stuff that they're carrying from all of their life and all of these hardships. And, you know, it goes from childhood illness to addiction to loss to death to suicide attempts to wreckage to bankruptcy to loss of children, and the list goes on, and you can feel the heaviness in the stories. There's an emotional heaviness, there's a tension in the body, and the body carries it a lot of times like a burden, like Atlas would carry the weight of the world on his shoulders, or like we would be protecting our heart from further damage. Or sometimes bodies will twist, as the trees and the high mountains will sometimes twist when they're confronted with a hard, bitter wind all the time, and they have to learn to twist to accommodate the bitterness and find ways to grow despite the cold wind. And so many of us are like these trees who have learned to endure very cold, bitter winds. And it can leave us wondering, why me? Why? Why me? I look on Facebook, everybody else's life seems great. Why me? And it's an important question. And when we ask that question, we're not actually going to get the answer that's going to empower us to make change. And so I want to share with you tonight the four steps for how to look at hardships, how to look at a lifetime of difficulty and a pattern of difficulty and stress as an actual gift. So we're going to talk about how to transmute this stress and these hardships into something meaningful for the community. So the first step is actually one of recontexting stress and hardship. We in spiritual communities have kind of been la-la'd into this notion, some of us, not all of us, not all spiritual communities are like this, but I've heard of some, that really adhere to this fundamental belief that life should be easy. And then when life isn't easy, as it often isn't, we are dissatisfied and disappointed and wondering, what the hell, this isn't, I must be doing something wrong because life has thrown me this hardship. You know, if I was doing everything right, then I would have $1 million in the bank and an excellent lover and a dog and 2.5 kids and a white picket fence or whatever the dream is. So when we have this expectation of life being easy, and then it isn't, because life isn't often, we can become disappointed and bitterness can grow. And then our tree begins to twist in the bitterness. And so that notion I would find is only half right. In yoga, there's this idea of effort and ease. Ease is an equal part to effort, and effort and ease kind of do this dance, and it's the masculine and feminine energy that kind of slam together and make life. And it's a combination of effort and ease is where the juiciness is. So to recontext this idea of hardship and stress is very important. So there are a couple of stories that I want to tell to help recontext the stress. And the reason the recontexting of hardship and stress is so important to me is because I hear so many people suffer under this idea that it needs to be easy. And so what will happen is we will avoid at all costs pain or anything that will cause us pressure and stress. Stress is defined as a challenge to our body, a challenge to our emotion, an intensity of life. And so if we avoid those things, then what we're really saying is, like, of all the colors I could paint my life with, I don't want those really bright colors because they're kind of intense. So I'm only going to paint the picture of my life with these shades of gray. And we lose this entire canvas, this entire palette of paint, of colors that we can paint our life. When we have this belief that stress is bad and hardship is bad, and we place all this judgment on experiences that happen to us, then we can also avoid what is actually our salvation, which is working through the challenge and the hardship. That, my darling loves, in a nutshell, is how we make medicine, by going through that door of challenge, of difficulty, of stress. Otherwise, we get the door of stress, we see that difficult thing, and we're like, wow, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. I'm going to stay here in this box. And we'll turn around, and then we'll hit another doorway that offers us stress and challenge. We're like, nope, don't want that door either, because I don't like that stress challenge stuff. So, dun, 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 dun. What we end up doing is becoming like a panther locked in a cage, because we're afraid to go through the doors where it might be hard. Now, we talked about jaguars last time, and a panther is about the same creature, and they need that space, and they're filled with courage. So a panther would approach these doors of challenges with a little bit of curiosity. So it's very important to recontext stress as not the evil that some people think that it is. It can be a very positive experience. Chronic stress obviously needs to be managed, and this is not a podcast about, here are the steps that you can manage stress. Take deep breaths, take hot baths. This is not that podcast. There are plenty of those out there that are beautiful. I'll probably make one because they're awesome. But this is not that. This is about how to use stress and hardship and pressure to transmute your life into something beautiful, much like coal will be pressed into a diamond, or an olive will be pressed into oil. My favorite, a grape, will be pressed into wine. We also become pressed into our greatness, into a newer, stronger version of ourselves. Here's my favorite little bit of context around stress and pressure. Like, think about being born. So before you were born, you were up in a womb somewhere. It was pretty cozy, you know? It was warm. You had food. It wasn't that noisy. No one really wanted or expected anything of you. You couldn't really make a fool of yourself. No one teased you on the playground. No one neglected you. No one abused you. You're just kind of chilling in a big soupy darkness, listening to a heartbeat. Bum, 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 bum. And it was a pretty good deal. And probably most of us, given the choice, would stay there forever. Why would we ever leave? That's so cozy. And we're never alone. We have this heartbeat right next to us all the time. Why would we ever leave? But because it's nature and it's natural to be under stress and pressure, this is what nature does. All of a sudden, nature's like, ding, the bell rings, and it's time. And that uterus starts to go wham, wham, wham. And all of a sudden, with that stress and pressure, bunk, here you are. 10 fingers, 10 toes, these weird squishy bodies, now you're having a human experience. It could never have happened without stress and pressure. Stress and pressure are really important. Another metaphor that I love about stress and pressure, or heaviness, is that in shamanic cultures, they personify the earth as Pachamama, and Pachamama is filled with heavy energy. She's filled with heavy rocks and dirt. I'm looking at my garden out the window. And all this stuff, that heaviness, this dark, rich, fertile soil. And it's so important, this heavy energy, because that's where we plunk the seeds of our becoming. The heaviness is necessary in our lives. If we are going to really live our lives, then we have to come into right relationship with the heaviness that has existed or does exist in our lives from time to time. I have a story for you in the recontexting. This is step one of four steps to transmute stress into something awesome. And in this recontexting, I want to tell this story. I tell it in Dharma school, but it's one of my favorite stories, and I think it applies here really great. And it answers the question, why me? So many people ask me that question, and I've told this story so many times that I feel like I need to tell all of you. So here it is. This is a story that I like to call Before We Are Born. And the story comes from a couple of different places, North America, South America, some Peruvian legends that I've totally naughty shamaned. So this is the naughty shaman version of this legend. Legend says that once upon a time, we were all just little balls of light. We were little balls of light hanging out up with the great oneness of all that is. With up in heaven, up in the great soup of cosmic light, up with God. And I'm going to go ahead and say God, and I know you can roll with me on that, even though what I'm using God as a substitute word for is that divine consciousness and light that has neither shape and is neither masculine nor feminine and animates all things in the cosmos. Rather than say that, I'm going to say God. Are we cool? We're cool. So here you are, a little ball of light hanging out with God. And you're like, you know, God, I've been thinking, I kind of want to go back down to earth. It's awesome. There's wind, mountains of fire, people, and bodies. Bodies are such a kick. They're so weird. So I've been thinking I'd like to go back down to earth. God says, great. Love it. What do you want to learn this time? What do you want to experience that you didn't quite get to experience the last time? So you say, well, I've been thinking about it. You know, I'd really like to learn about love and self-worth because I feel like you can never get enough of that. I love love. And you know, when they forget that when they have these human bodies, how important it is and how it works. And so I feel like I still have a lot to learn around love. God says, great. Let's do it. So if you want to do that, who would be the perfect parents for you? Ah, so they open the magic window and you look down on earth and you're like, yeah. That gal in Boston, she's a go-getter. She's like a corporate Wonder Woman. I'll have plenty of money in the house. It'll be great, but she totally drinks too much and she'll ignore me forever and totally get tons of plastic surgery and not pay any attention to me. So it'll be perfect, please, because I have no other choice except for to learn how to love myself. So I'd love for her to be my mom. She's super cool. Awesome. How about your dad? Well, let me look. That guy over in LA, dang, he's a mess. He's riding around in a motorcycle. I don't even know what kind of drugs he's selling there, but that is a total good looking bad boy. And I feel like I would like that rebellious spirit because I'll probably get into trouble and then it'll be really hard for other people to love me because I'll be so angry. So then I'll learn about love in that way too. So that'd be awesome. Great. God opens the hands and says the magic words, Om Namah Shivaya, blah, 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 poof. All of a sudden, this gal up here, the corporate go-getter in Boston, all of a sudden is like, you know what? I think I'm going to go to the beach for a couple days. So she jumps on a plane, heads out to LA. She's at a bar like, woo. She meets this guy at a bar who's like, woo, coo-coo-coo. 9 months later, there's you. 10 fingers, 10 toes, and a squishy body, perfectly set up for exactly what you wanted to learn. You landed in this life exactly where you needed to be to get your origin story for what would become important to you, for what could make your medicine. You're born with all the potential lessons that you'll need to become who you are meant to become. It's our origin story. And imagine now in that story that while you're up here, this little ball of light chatting with God, that you're like, you know, among other things, love, self-worth. I also, you know what? I really want to give back to humanity and I really want to help them. This is an exciting time on the planet. Everybody is expanding their consciousness. I want to help with that. I want to help people wake up. I want to create safe places for them to have conversations because they're losing their ability to communicate. I want to be of service when I go down there, and I want to touch people's lives and make a difference while I'm there. And God says, great, then we're going to give you a lot of extra lessons. So my friends, what if this is the answer to why me? Why did so many people die when I was young? Why did I lose everything I ever loved right through my fingers before the age of 25? Why? What if it's because that pain and that hardship and that stress and pressure dug a deep well in your soul, dug like it bears down on you like a weight, and it just digs into the soul with all of the heaviness. Sometimes it feels like a rock that you can't get out from under. And some of us know that place of wondering if I'll ever be happy again, if I'll ever be able to breathe again, wondering if it's worth it to even try again. That's what spirit often will do in the beginnings of our life, especially if we've signed up to be of service. It'll create a lot of hardship. There'll be opportunities for hardship so that we have a deep well. And then somewhere in the middle of our lives, in our late 20s, late 30s, late 40s, late 50s, it becomes our task to clear out the heaviness of that well, to heal, to find ways to clear the rubble, the scars, the lessons, the lies that we learned were true, to clear those out and reframe them, open up to new possibilities. So then, because of the heaviness, we only have really two choices. We either go on a healing journey of growth, a soulful growth where you have to rely on something bigger than you, or we choose to stay small and to never come to full life, live in a half life. If you've been buried under a lot of that rubble, a lot of that hardship, those are the choices that you end up getting faced with at some time. Many of you know this place and have chosen to go on a healing journey. That's why you're listening to this podcast. So right on. So when we heal and we clear out all the rubble in that well, if you can imagine, like this deep well goes down and then it's filled with concrete, all the heaviness, all the shame, all the guilt, all the pain, all the grief, everything kind of accumulates in there. And at some point we hit the bottom and we're like, damn, I can't do it like that anymore. That is, my friend, step two. This is one of my favorite steps to find in a healing journey because it's so potent. I call it the edge. At some point in your healing journey, you arrive at the edge where the edge is like a precipice where you don't know what's beyond the edge, but you do know what was behind the edge. And you know on the edge that you can't stay there anymore. It's almost impossible to stay on the edge for very long because the way of being becomes so painful at the edge. The way that you think, that your self-criticism, your self-loathing, your self-doubt all becomes so massive that you have no idea how to do it differently, but you're willing to try anything because you know you can't do it this way anymore. I can't deal with my bullshit anymore. So I have to try something else. I'm willing to try something else. I'm willing to learn anything to not do it like this anymore. Anything's got to be better than being here. That, my friends, is the edge. That's the real harbinger of a medicine person, a medicine woman, a medicine man, because they have said enough. I have to find a better way. I remember this point in my journey and I had no idea, but I knew every relationship that I had in my life, I was dissatisfied with, including my spouse at the time, my children, my teachers, my neighbors, my everything. I was totally dissatisfied with every one of them. And at some point, you realize that it's not that the whole world is the asshole, that there's something wrong inside your brain and the way you're seeing things. And so I realized, wow, this is a me problem, not a them problem. So I have to go in. And I was so sick of blaming everyone else for my own problems. that I didn't know how to accept responsibility and do what I needed to do, but I knew I had to stop doing that. I knew I had to stop blaming life, God, everyone else for the stuff that was going on in my life. I knew that I had to do it differently. So that was one of the first edges in my healing journey. What took me on the healing journey was that awareness. So the edge is a really powerful place. And it's step two. After you recontext what is stress and hardship, that it's actually healthy, then you kind of hunt for these moments of edge. And when you're on the edge, the thing that you want to do is spend a moment and think about what has to go. What is it here that cannot function anymore? I've outgrown it. Like an old way of being armored and resistant and tight with our emotions and conservative with our love, served us when we were surrounded by abusive people. Served us for a while, and that's why we learned to be that way. But then as we go on in life and we are exposed to different and wonderful people, we realize, wow, we're still armored, but they're actually cool. And I'm still armored. And the way of being armored has run its course. You've outgrown it. Your life has outgrown it. And so that way of being has to die. So when you're on the edge, one of the most important questions you can ask yourself is, what's dying? What way of being is dying? What part of me has to go? What habits have to go? What can no longer, what's too painful to keep with me anymore? That, my friends, is the edge. I have some really beautiful client stories about their edge. And I remember working with this one young woman who, from an early age, had a history of addiction. So this is often the case with people who carry deep medicine and have signed up to be healers, givers of service on the planet. So she had a very early history of addiction and pain and abuse of all kinds. And she was recalling that day where she remembers that she was kind of hitting another rock bottom. There were several rock bottoms in her rock bottom story, but she was hitting another one. And this one ended up being the final one. And she remembers looking in the mirror after just a heinous evening of events and bad decisions and bad feelings and realizing that she could no longer be in relationship with drugs at all. She didn't have any idea who she was. That's what she said to me. She was like, Natalie, I have no idea who I am sober. But I have to find out because I can't be this way anymore. It's killing me. It's killing every relationship and it's killing all the people around me. I don't want it anymore. And I'm so scared because I have no idea how to do the next thing. Oh, that moment is like a precious, most courageous moment of staring truth right in the face and not flinching. Like, it's so powerful because here she is having this brave moment of seeing who she is. Exactly. All the flaws, all the beauty, everything. With no judgment and just realizing the way I've been doing it, I can't do it any longer. And I'm willing to choose the unknowable place, the unknown, than to stay where it's comfortable and where I know. Oh, it's so brave. I'm so proud of her. And she's been sober now for many years. She's an amazing young woman who has a tremendous gift now to share with people because she knows that cave, you know? When we go, for instance, into the wilderness, we only want to really follow people who have been in that same wilderness area. If you're going to go climb Everest, you don't want a guide who's never climbed Everest. Do you know what I mean? So when we look for people to support us in our own healing journey, we tend to gravitate to people who have been through similar struggles. And so as one who has wrestled with an addiction and abuse from a young age, she gets to help people and be a lighthouse for helping people not abuse themselves, for helping people not abuse drugs, for helping people not be in abusive relationships. She gets to be of service in a really big way in her world, just, you know, going to her 9-to-5 job. She's of massive service in the world because she carries this medicine. She has healed herself with her own medicine by overcoming her hardships. So can you hear that in this way, our hardships are like that rich fertile soil where the seeds of who we are becoming are planted. It's right there in that story. Another example is this gentleman who was a client of mine and in relationship with a woman who he experienced as very critical, very hypercritical of everything that he ever did. It was never enough. And she had a complete lack of gratitude for what he provided for her and her family, which was financial security and safety and calmness and steadiness. And she wasn't the place where she could recognize the value of that at the time. And so he was at a place where he was tolerating that because the benefits outweighed the problems. And as he grew and started to understand his own worthiness and start to value things like respect and value things like reciprocity, then what he realized is that their values didn't match. She did not value respect and reciprocity in the same way that he did. And so I remember his edge sounded a little like, I have no idea how I'm going to talk to her about this because she comes at me like a spider monkey and I shrink and I don't know how to be in my place of worthiness and power and have a conversation with her that's productive. Because it's something we've never done. It's something I've never done. And I don't know how she's going to react. She could smack me across the face, fall down crying. She could leave. I don't know what the outcome is. But whatever the outcome, and here's the edge, whatever the outcome, I'm willing to step into that unknowable thing, that unknown, because I can't do it like this anymore. I can't do another day under that dynamic of criticism and shrinking. I can't do it. So that was his edge. He could no longer shrink and be criticized and live in that environment. So he had to have and learn a way to have a conversation differently to create a different kind of dynamic in the relationship. So that edge is actually what we sometimes call an experiential learning, the teachable moment or a place of optimal stress where we have enough stress that we're like wide awake to what's happening around us, but we don't have so much stress that we're like, oh, it's too hard. So we're actually hyper-focused and very absorbent to learning new things. Under that kind of pressure and hardship, we can learn very rapidly what we need to get through the next unknowable thing. It's beautiful. So that is all about the edge. That's all I wanted to say about the edge. I have so many client stories, but I think that you understand what the edge is. And maybe, you know, one of my other favorite client stories is I remember that this one young woman was so great, and she was married for a long, long time and was married to someone who couldn't make a commitment to the marriage and couldn't commit to honesty. And so he developed a very strong pattern of infidelity. And in the beginning, she was kind of like, no harm, no foul, don't ask, don't tell. And the good outweighed the bad. And as she grew in her understanding of self-worth, then it became obvious that she could no longer stay in a position of worth and in relationship with this man because he, after many conversations, was unwilling to change. And so at that edge, she's like, I don't know what life is going to be like without him. But whatever it is, I can't do life with him in this dynamic anymore. So those are just some brilliant examples of the edge. So anyway, I am going to move on now to like step three, which is one of my favorite steps. I love talking about the edge because it's so easy to see. But in step three, step three is like the beginning of the new. It's the birthplace of the new beginning. Step three is the unraveling. And I call it the unraveling because as soon as you're on the edge and you make that awareness of I can't stay here and I'm willing to surrender into the unknown thing, and you just lean on in. There's a surrender to not having to control the outcome, to not having to manipulate the other's response, to just dropping into the pristine truth of what is and what is not. There's something so comforting in the unraveling. It's like the soul takes a deep breath because there's nothing to pretend. It's a little bit like an ego death. It is an ego death. I experience it as an unraveling, because I imagine that I'm all wired up in these thoughts and beliefs and habits and patterns and emotional moods and things. That's like a nest of string. And when I surrender past the edge into the unknown, there's a spaciousness, and all the threads start to separate and they begin to unravel from one another. And everything that I thought was so important about being the good mom and the PTA superstar and the one who has the cleanest kitchen or whatever was important to me back then, as those things begin to loosen their grip on my soul, it feels like an unraveling into something unknown, into a new place. The next thing that happens in the unraveling is that there's this moment of fear, because there's a lack of knowing of who am I if I am not that. So some authors will call this the unbound state. You're not who you were, and you're also not who you're becoming. So there's this moment in time where you're unbound by any definition, by any roles, by any expectations, by any outcomes. The unraveling is one of the most important choices in the healing journey, because without the willingness to unravel, it's like we're trying to get from first base to second base without letting go of first base. We want to have first base and get to second base. And a lot of people get caught there and they never quite leave and they never quite, and they just, so you have to let go of what was in order to step fully into what is becoming. The unraveling requires two things. It requires a tremendous amount of trust. Trust in your own abilities, your own bounce back ability, your own resiliency, your own emotional resiliency. It takes a lot of trust in the process, this natural process of pressure, death, rebirth, growth. And then the seed falls again in pressure, death, rebirth, growth. This process is reflected in nature in a thousand different ways, from the simplest being our inhale and exhale. The inhale of life, the exhale of death, the inhale of rebirth, the letting go, the taking in. By the sunrise and the sunset, by the 28-day moon cycle from fullness to emptiness, by the pulling of the tides, this process is timeless. Timeless. Stars go through it. Stars go through the supernova phase. And are born and grow and become massively radiant, and then implode and die, sometimes into black holes. Nature is filled with these explosions of life and death, and it's the way that life is made. It's the way that nature rolls. It's her jam, and we are not separate from it. And so trusting and being in nature and with natural processes is very important. When we don't allow things to die from our life, we are interrupting the natural process. When we try to hold on to things way past their expiration date, we are interrupting the natural process, and we are interrupting our rebirth. So the unraveling is a very potent step in the transmutation. It's like the mystery box of the transmutation. It is the dark night where the magic happens, where the soul says, I have no idea who I am. In the brilliance of not knowing, we have available to us infinite possibilities. Because if I'm in a place where I have no idea who I am and what I'm capable of and what's possible for me, any outcome is possible in that moment. Any. I mean, think about it. The unraveling is the most sacred part of the journey. And it's the hardest because it requires no doing. There's no doing. We are addicted to doing in our culture. And this is a time of not doing. This is a time of being. It's dropping way into the feminine energy of just being and coming into right relationship with simply being and not knowing and dropping into the mystery. I mean, look at us. We are an absolute mystery. How do these cells in this skin communicate to one another and agree to make these particular fingerprints and these particular lines in my palm that someone can read that somehow makes me different than my children, somehow makes me different than my parents, somehow makes me different than my neighbors and my loved ones? How did that happen? We are an unknowable mystery in our very physical form. And so to take up residence in the unraveling, in that place of the unknowable thing into the mystery, is such a gift. And it's not a place that we can stay forever. It's not a place that you'd want to stay forever. But it is such a rich place because that's where we open and new possibilities come in. We become, quote unquote, inspired. We breathe in the divine when we are on our knees. When we are unraveled is when we have space finally for the divine to enter. It's precious. And that's the unraveling. After the unraveling, there comes a time where you know the unraveling is complete. There gets to be a little itch you can't scratch, a little curiosity you can't ignore, a yearning that starts to bud and then blossom. And in this inspired yearning straight from spirit, we begin to catch glimpses of what it is now that we need to learn. In this time of rebuilding after the unraveling, we have like this fresh look on life where we are going to have to learn how to maybe walk differently. We might have to learn to talk differently. We might have to learn to think differently. We might have to have new habits. We might have to learn to have conversations differently. We may have to learn really radical things like trusting or being quiet or staying home on a Saturday night. We might have to learn a whole new set of things. So many people that I was working with over the last couple of weeks got homework that sounds like this. Go date yourself. Go pretend like you just met on Match.com with yourself and you want to know everything about that person. You're like so deeply intrigued and curious and falling in love with that person that you have to know everything about yourself. Take yourself out on dates. Do you like those kind of books or those kind of books? Or don't you like books at all? Do you like those movies or those movies? This music or this music? Like Julia Roberts in that old movie, what kind of eggs do you like to eat? It might not be the same. We have to hold space for ourselves and give ourselves permission to become brand new. Around Naughty Shaman, we call this updating files. I love that because like our files go blah, blah, blah. Okay, the Taylor I knew is not the Taylor that's here anymore because she is in a rapid process of transformation. And so every day I get to interact with Taylor and I wonder who she is today. And she's looking at me wondering, who is Natalie today? And we get this genuinely curious conversation going about, who are you today? What's making you happy? What's causing you stress? What's going on in your life? I'd like to re-get to know you in every moment. Because once you step on this path, change happens quickly. So step four is to begin again, become the beginner. It's like the first day of first grade. You're going to get your little backpack. You got your dorky little lunchbox. And you're like, yeah, I'm going to school and I'm going to learn new stuff. And it's so exciting. And so this is the phase of beginner's mind in yoga. And, you know, beginner's mind gets some talk, but it's so precious when you really think about it, like by our birthright, because we are part of this natural cycle of life. Our birthright is to begin again at any time we feel like it. We don't need anyone's permission. All we need is this breath to remind us that we can be made new, just like a fresh breath. All we need is the sunrise to know that we can begin again, be different. All we do is watch the plants grow in our garden and know we can begin again. It's our birthright. to let go of things that we've outgrown and begin again and learn and make crazy mistakes, make thousands of mistakes, because that's how children learn. That's how we learn as adults. We make mistakes. You're learning how to have conversations with your loved ones from a more powerful, calm place. Guess what? You're going to jack up probably 10, 15 of those conversations before you're like, oh, they're working. It's the practice that makes the change happen. Magic doesn't happen because someone wiggles their nose or snaps their fingers like in the movies or musicals. Magic happens because we choose it and we practice it. We practice creating it. It doesn't happen out of thin air. We create it by becoming who we want to be, by creating a life that we want, that we design. And it looks from the outside in like magic. But what it really is a lot of risk, a lot of vulnerability, a lot of courage, a lot of practice, a lot of mistakes, and more practice. And that's the magic. That is the magic of how to transmute stress and hardship into something beautiful. Because after you go through these four steps of recontexting, of knowing the edge, of my favorite, unraveling, and of beginning again, being willing to learn, then what you're left with is wisdom. And my darlings, the world is aching for wisdom. We're all repeating a bunch of shit other people said on an Instagram feed. That's not wisdom. Wisdom is this process. Wisdom is moving through your life's hardships, healing them, and learning what to learn from them, and being brave enough to step into a new way of being. This is what creates wisdom. And our particular brand of wisdom from our own lives, you know, from the time before we were born, we set up the kind of wisdom we were here to learn. Some of us were born into very rigid families where love and laughter and silliness was not permitted. And so here we begin to make our medicine around joy and expression and fun. Some of us were born into families without boundaries, and we were overlooked and kind of left free to roam, almost neglected. And here we learn to make medicine of boundaries and self-worth. Some of us were born into abusive families where there was harm. If you spoke up for something good for yourself, if you had needs or if you had wants, you were punished. And so here we have the seeds of medicine, the medicine that we will make into what is passion? What is hope? All of our hardships are fuel for our heart, for our desire, for our mission here. None of it was an accident. And my loves, none of it was because you were bad. None of it was because of some evil karma you did somewhere when. No. Some of it, all of it, I would suggest, is because you had a calling to be of service this time around. And in order to grow wisdom, you needed some hardship. What are you going to make out of it? What medicine are you making? I would love to hear your stories if you want to leave me comments about what is the medicine you're making from your life and your hardships and your pain. I would love to listen to those stories. They would be so inspirational. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for tuning in to Naughty Shaman, where we like to keep the sacred alive and wisdom alive, and to keep it all a little wild and totally real. Ah.
Ugh.